Welcome to the Energetic Radio Podcast. My name is Dale Sowerbottom. Each week, I'll bring you inspirational guests who will help you bring fun, energy, and purpose into your lives. Let the show begin.
Welcome to episode number 329 with Betsy Hill. Now, I loved my chat with Betsy, and I think when you sit on the line with somebody and you can just really resonate with what they're saying, it was like I was talking to a mirror because there were so many things Betsy was talking about that I was just nodding along because I could not agree more. And I think that's why it's so important to listen again to what we're going to share today. This is Betsy, and this is something that you all need to hear.
So one of the things that tends to happen in school is that people will encourage us and say, well, your child is having difficulty with this, and they may never be, you know, really very good at this, and you just can't expect too much of them. Or we as parents don't want our kids, we don't want to watch them struggle. And so we might help them a little bit or make things a little bit easier. But what really happens then is that they lose confidence in themselves because they know that mom or dad is going to step in if they get to be feeling struggle. And so they won't try as hard and they won't push as hard. And the other thing is that when you have those high standards, you will go and search out the kinds of resources that your child needs to be able to make them successful. So it'll foster that energy and that commitment to seeking out information, resources, ways to help that are not just going to fall in your lap. You're going to have to seek them out.
Yeah, and not only that, again, it's more rewarding as well for you as a parent because, you know, there's so many things out there now that you're not always going to find the right thing straight away. But when you do, it's such a good feeling that you know you've put that work in and you're really helping your kid. And you're not passing the blame, you're doing it and you've found it. It's crucial.
Right. And with many of these, what you learn so much about your child, you get so much insight into your child that you never had before. In many cases, so when we're working on these underlying cognitive skills, and step three is actually build cognitive infrastructure, is help your child develop the skills that are essential for learning, everything from attention to things like working memory. And there's a whole class of these. These are mental processes. It's how information gets into our brains, is organized, stored, retrieved, applied, and our brains are organize themselves and learn in interaction with the environment. So that's how it starts. So if all that's happening efficiently and accurately, that's wonderful. But if there are some teachers listening to the podcast, I would ask you to consider whether you have ever had a class full of students with great attention skills. And every time I ask a group of educators to stand up, if they have that, I've never had anybody stand up. But attention is one of those obvious ones. You know, we see kids who are, ADHD is, we want to assign that to lots of kids these days. Sometimes they need that diagnosis. Sometimes they don't really, but, so attention is something that we see and sort of observe, but there are a whole bunch of other skills that are happening, whether or not you take in information visually effectively and, you know, keep it organized, whether you can, are good at judging where things are in space relative to each other and how they're rotated, whether, you know, you're taking in information and keeping it in the right sequence when it comes in. And so all those can be underlying issues that are real stumbling blocks to the learning process. And so that's really why we know how important it is, because when they're struggling, then it's much harder for kids to stick with it, to, you know, be engaged. You know what it's like when there's something you think you're not very good at. And you say, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll pass on that today. You know, maybe I'll put my head on my desk. Or maybe I'll be the class clown today so that I don't have to answer that, do that math problem that I don't know how to do.
And I'm nodding my head here because that's exactly what I used to do, Betsy, when I was in school, because you'd play activities or you'd do things and you knew there'd be levels and you'd look on the wall and there's what level you're in. And I was always in the low level, or you'd play a game and you'd lose and you'd have to sit out and watch. And that's where it's really important that it's not always about winning or losing. It's just about playing and having fun and being engaged. And I think that's one of the most important things I've noticed with engagement, that it comes through play. And when you can get that engagement, then, you know, you've got people, you've built that relationship, that trust, and then you can go a little bit deeper. How, and this is a really selfish question, how important is that play element with, you know, that cognitive learning and for kids to be sort of engaged with what they're doing, but also being able to process everything that's going through their mind?
So I completely agree with you. And I think that play, gaming, is way underestimated in terms of its potential. And actually, so when we, the program that we use that helps build these cognitive skills is actually delivered in a video game format. So it is incorporates the best practices of video games. So it has characters and it has action and it has nice graphics and it has reward systems and all those kinds of things. And that, you know, when you're playing a game, you can try stuff that you wouldn't. And I also use a lot of games when I teach in the MBA. I teach in an MBA program. I teach strategic thinking, and we do a lot of games. And I tell my students the reason we, and these are adults, learners, but I tell them the reason we do these games is because nobody dies. You know, you can try, you can make a mistake, you can do it over again. And you get another life, you get another chance to do it. And so it's a safe environment. And that's what we need. You know, you don't learn and you don't get better at doing things that are above where you're able to perform right now by sitting there and only doing the things that you already know how to do. You have to reach, you have to go a little bit beyond where your that comfort zone is. And in a gaming environment, you know, when it, especially when you're on a computer and you're sort of playing, you know, against yourself, that's a lot easier. You know, it's a little, you know, sad to, when you think about kids playing a game in school or in that spelling bee where you had to sit down because you couldn't spell.
Got it wrong. I still can't spell either, Betsy. So I'm still sitting down.
Well, you know, and I happen to be a wonderful speller, and I remember winning a spelling bee with the capital of the state of New Mexico here in the U.S., which is Albuquerque. So I won't ask you to spell that.
Oh, it's please, just fine, please, but... please don't, please don't, Betsy.
So, and that's all fine. But that's another point about what sort of the limitations of education is that. In a typical classroom, which is in school, we tend to focus so much on what a kid can't do. You know, he hasn't learned to spell Albuquerque yet. He hasn't learned to all of his times tables. He hasn't done this. And so we're always looking at those gaps. And what we don't do, but what we can and we should do is understand a child's strengths. So obviously you were meant to do a podcast and to entertain and to inquire and to be just really curious about a lot of things in the world. And there are probably some underlying cognitive skills that really allow you to do that. I'd like to talk about it as, you know, we're always in search of doing something that we do well, that likes us back. You know, so you find how your skills fit up against the things that you get to try and try to do. And when kids understand what their strengths are. So here's a really simple example. You may remember having assignments to learn new vocabulary when you were in school. And my guess is your teacher might have asked you to write the word, write the definition of the word, and write the word in a sentence. And I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say that that was especially because you just told me that spelling was not your forte. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that that kind of assignment was excruciating for you.
Oh, it
and
still is.
took
it
you
still
a
is,
long
Betsy.
time,
Oh.
and it didn't stick, right?
No, obviously not. Obviously not.
So my guess is if we gave you a cognitive assessment, that what would we would find out, among other things, that your visual memory is much stronger than your verbal memory. So that is your memory for pictures and diagrams and charts and graphs. So if you probably drew pictures of things to help you understand them and remember them. Yeah, so you found your way to that. But nobody told you, Dale, you have really strong visual memory. And here's how you can use it to study your vocabulary words and to be more efficient and to be more successful. And so that's really where we start, is with understanding those skills and then helping kids understand them. And when I talk to them, I talk to them about their learning superpowers. And I tell them, you know, where they're really strong. And I said, in any learning situation, you pull out, this is like the Superman cape in your closet. You pull that out and you put it on when you're having difficulty learning something. And this is what's going to get you through that.